Okay, good afternoon. This is Bio160, and it's February 3rd. And we were scheduled to have a test today, but because of the disaster drill, we put it off till Thursday. So we're going to have it Thursday. It looks good for Thursday. We got plenty of time to finish up this chapter and answer some questions and all that kind of stuff. So maybe I'll just review a little bit too, because we talked about membrane transport. And don't forget, there are two main ways that something can be transported across a membrane. And you're thinking, what are two main categories? Active transport versus passive transport. And active transport means that something can only go from high concentration to low. That's passive transport. Okay, you want to do active first? Active goes from low concentration to high. You need energy to go up the hill, right? Like if that was my car or if it's a concentration gradient. What's the energy molecule that your cell uses to move things from low concentration to high? ATP is the energy molecule, right? So if you ever see a diagram anytime in your life and you see something going from low concentration to high, you should see ATP molecules being used up as well, okay? But if something goes from high concentration to low, what do we call that? That's passive transport. Doesn't require energy for that to move. That just happens automatically. All right? And then we talked about some specific kinds of active transport mechanisms like phagocytosis, pinocytosis. That has to do with vesicles, right? Because the membrane has to change shape. There has to be things that pull and push on the membrane to change the shape of the membrane. That requires ATP for that to happen. Those are the microfilaments and microtubules. So, for instance, if there's something outside the cell and it gets swallowed up by the cell by this vesicle process, right, that's what we call phagocytosis. Yeah, phagocytosis. Yeah, that's cell eating. Or if it's just a solution of material that the cell wants to engulf, we call that pinocytosis. That's cell drinking. Right? In every case, stuff starts on the outside and ends up on the inside of the cell, like right here inside a vesicle. Those processes where things go from outside to inside, we call those endocytosis. So phagocytosis and pinocytosis are specific examples of the more general endocytosis. Yeah. Okay. I'll mention that in just a second. Okay, but secretion, which is your question, is not stuff starting on the outside of the cell and ending up on the inside. It's what? When stuff is on the inside and it ends up on the outside. That's secretion. Okay, so secretion is the opposite of endocytosis. And generally we call that exocytosis. So secretion is active transport, but it's exocytosis, where you have some kind of product that the cell has made. Ooh. You guys. How's that? Ooh, that's really good compared to how it was. Okay. All right, so here you have a vesicle with some stuff on the inside, and then it moves over to the plasma membrane right here, fuses with the plasma membrane, and whatever on the inside ends up outside the cell. So that's exocytosis, or you could say secretion, and that goes from inside to outside. That is also active. That requires ATP for that to happen, to move the membrane around. Now, you should probably have a feel for why this vesicle fuses with the plasma membrane. What can you tell me about all membranes in the body? What's the basic building block of all membranes in your body? They're a phospholipid bilayer, right? So this membrane is similar with that one, so as soon as they touch each other, they fuse together because they have the same nature. They have the same building blocks. And I think I talked about when you used to play as a little kid with a little soap bottle and a little hoop. You stick a little hoop in the soap bottle and wing it around in the air. You get those soap bubbles that float around. And, you know, if they ever touch a wall or something, what would happen to them? They just pop, right? And sometimes they would touch each other, right? And sometimes they would pop, but other times what would happen? They would just form one big bubble because the soap film on both bubbles are the same, right? So the same thing is happening with this vesicle right here. The membrane of the vesicle is the same as the plasma membrane, so it can fuse together very easily. It has the same properties. All right, so don't forget, these are all active transport processes right there. All right, so I think we were at cell division when we stopped. All right, so cell division, you want to draw some things on the board first. Let me see if I have a nice dark marker. Cell division means that you have a cell right here, and it's going to divide. It's going to split into two cells. That's awfully light. Right? It's going to split. Oh, that's better. It's going to split into two cells. And inside this cell, there's a nucleus that contains your DNA, contains chromosomes. And every species have a different number of chromosomes. Do you know how many chromosomes are in the human? I don't know why anybody would know that yet, but yeah, 46. This is true. All right, so let me just say that this is the nucleus right here. There's 46 chromosomes inside this cell, but they're specially arranged. They're not just 46 chromosomes. They're arranged into two sets of chromosomes. There's a number one over here, number two, three, all the way down to 23. And the same over here, one, two, three, all the way down to a number 23. So these are very similar. Number one over here and number one over here are similar. This number one is a lot different than this number two and this number two, but these number twos are similar. Okay, so the same number of chromosomes are similar. And why do you have two sets of chromosomes? Yeah, one from your mom, one from your dad, right? So these are from your mom, and these are your papa chromosomes right here. All right, so we call that paternal and maternal set. All right, with mitosis, right here, mitosis, after cell division, okay, these are what we call daughter cells. These are daughter cells, and these daughter cells are identical. They're identical, they're the same. And this one over here we call the parent cell. And the parent cell and the daughter cells are the same as well. All right, so these cells are all the same. You could think of these cells as being clones of the parent cell. And these two daughter cells are clones of each other. They're identical to each other. All right, so you might be wondering, if we have 46 chromosomes over here, if they're identical, how many chromosomes we have over here? 46 as well. What about this one? 46 as well down over here. All right, but if we add this number together, what do we got? We got 92 chromosomes. How is it that you got 92 chromosomes over here, but only 46 over here? Okay. What happens is that these chromosomes have to be duplicated. That process we don't call duplication in biology. We call it replication. So these chromosomes, when you have 46, they kind of look like a bow tie. All right. But before mitosis takes place, it has to be replicated. So when this chromosome gets replicated, it looks like that. And they're attached right here. All right, so an unreplicated chromosome looks like that. When it's replicated, it kind of looks like an X. It goes from a bow tie to an X. These things right here are what we call sister chromatids. Chromatids. And where does this chroma come from? Comes from chromosomes, right? Sister chromatids. These chromosomes right here that are very similar to each other, that has a name as well. These are called homologous chromosomes. Homologous chromosomes. Okay. All right. So when mitosis takes place, the sister chromatids get separated into the two daughter cells so that every cell gets 46 chromosomes. That's how mitosis works. So replication has to happen first. Okay, so mitosis is a process where cells duplicate themselves. Now, the reason, why do these cells duplicate themselves? That's kind of an important concept. Why do they duplicate themselves? Well, for instance, on my skin right here, there are special cells, and if I just gently scratch my skin like this, and I flick my fingers like that, I've just flicked like 10,000 cells off in that direction. Right? And if I do that again, what's going to happen? Another 10,000 cells. And after doing that for a couple minutes, what's going to happen to me? I'm going to disappear. Right? Well, not quite, but almost. All right, so when you lose cells, they have to be replaced. Right? So one function of mitosis is to do what? To replace old and damaged cells. Damaged cells, or you lose cells because they rub off of you. Other cells have a very finite lifetime. For instance, a red blood cell are cells that you have in your blood. They carry oxygen. They live for a very short period of time, only about 120 days, and then they're dead. They go away. All right, so does anybody know how many red blood cells die in your body every second? Because they live only for a very short period of time. How many die in your body every second? A lot, this is true, between 2 and 3 million. That's a huge number, right? 2 and 3 million red blood cells die every second. So what do we call that condition when you have an abnormally low red blood cell count?
Anemia.
That's anemia, right? So how many cells, how many red blood cells does your body have to make every second so that you don't become anemic? Well, if you're losing, say, 3 million every second, your body has to make exactly 3 million so that you don't run out. So is that a lot? Oh, yeah, your body is really busy all day and night long making red blood cells so that you don't run out. The process that it makes it by is what? Mitosis, to replace old and damaged cells, right? Cells that die or damage. Another function of mitosis is that at one point in time, here was a gamete from your mom, and here is a gamete from your dad. Okay, what do we call this gamete right here? That's a sperm, right? And here's an egg. These came together to form a single cell. It just so happens that this one had 23 chromosomes, and this one has 23 chromosomes, so this cell ends up with what? 46, you know, back at 46 chromosomes. And this cell right here has got a name. This cell is called a zygote. That's a zygote. So we all were a zygote at one point in our life, right? Zygote. I suppose you could call your little brother or sister that if you want to insult them, zygote. Okay. But a zygote really is not all that fascinating because you can't come to anatomy class and take notes if you're just a zygote, right? Because you're just a single cell. So how do you go from a zygote to this right here? You have to, what, add cells. You have to grow. And what's that process that adds cells? That a zygote all of a sudden becomes 2 cells and 4 cells, and then 8, and then 16, 32, and then sooner or later, all of a sudden you're trillions of cells. That process is called mitosis, right? So those two reasons are the reasons for mitosis: replace old and damaged cells and to grow. Okay, that's mitosis. Okay, well, now let's talk about some of the steps necessary for mitosis. All right, so when we saw mitosis right here, these cells are identical to each other. This is a form of reproduction, but we call it asexual reproduction. Asexual reproduction produces the same cell over and over and over again without variation, right? So that also then tells you what sexual reproduction does. If asexual produces the same thing without variation, what does sexual reproduction produce? The same thing over and over again with variation, right? That's the whole purpose of sexual reproduction. But we're not talking about that. We're just talking about asexual reproduction first. All right, here are some steps. These are the steps that you have to know for mitosis. Active mitosis starts with prophase right here. The first one I have right here is really a growth phase. That's not where the cell is dividing, but that's where the cell is getting ready to undergo mitosis. And it is growing. For instance, that's where the the chromosomes, or what do we call this process, going from one to this? This is called replication. Right, so during interphase, the chromosomes are replicated so that when they split, both daughter cells get the same number of chromosomes. That happens during interphase. And then you have prophase, metaphase, anaphase, telophase. And that's easy to remember because of this acronym right here, IPMAT. And you might say, well, that's not any easier to remember than prophase, metaphase, anaphase, telophase for you. But you know what? Recently, right, you kind of hear things on the news that sound like IPMAT, right? There are specially trained teams of people that go out and clean up spills of like diesel fuel on the freeway or out in the harbor or something like that. What do we call those crews that can go and clean a terrible mess up without hurting themselves? Hazmat crews, right? So think of hazmat, but for biology, think of IPMAT instead. And the first, this letter right here corresponds to the first letter of that phase. So I stands for interphase, P stands for the next phase, which is prophase, and then the next one, M, for metaphase, anaphase, telophase. Right, so that will help you remember the order of these phases right here. All right, now what you have to know is what's happening during those phases. So let's take a look at a picture of those different phases. Oh, this is actually a nice illustration of everything. This is the whole cell cycle all together. We see from here all the way around, this is going like a clock over to here. This is interphase. And you can see what? Growth happening during some of these, right? And then replication of chromosome is happening during part of interphase. So I'm not going to ask you to remember all of these different things, but interphase you should just know as what? A growth phase that the cell goes through. And then when the cell's ready to divide, mitosis starts with prophase, and then there's a metaphase, and anaphase, and telophase. Okay, so, and then after telophase, the cell goes back into another growth phase or interphase, right? And that just repeats itself over and over again. Okay. All right, so let's look at some parts of, specific parts of the cell cycle. And this is a pretty good illustration right here. So where do we want to start? I want to start looking at this, okay, like right about here. Okay, can you see that at all? Yes, pretty well. Maybe I'll turn this light off. Sorry, you guys in the back row, you just got cut off your lights. Is that okay? Okay. So here we see a cell, and I see a nuclear envelope right here with a little nucleolus on the inside of it. Remember, the nucleolus is the active part of the nucleus, and the nucleus contains DNA, which is arranged in chromosomes, and so it's protected from everything that's going on inside the cytoplasm. And if I look inside this nucleus, I don't know if I really can see chromosomes. It looks pretty homogeneous, except for that spot right there. So here is the real micrograph of what a cell looks like in interphase. The chromosomes are what we call extended. They're being used. They're very thin filaments, and you can't really see them with a light microscope. It just kind of just looks like spaghetti everywhere inside the nucleus. All right, and then when the cell starts to divide, that extended chromatin is wrapped up on proteins, right, and that protects the chromatin from breaking. That's like putting all of your things in a piece of luggage before you take a trip, right? And so now I can actually see some chromosomes right in here. Can you see some thicker structures? So all the thin strands of chromatin are wound up on protein molecules and protected because the nuclear envelope is going to disappear. And you can see the nuclear envelope starting to disappear right there. You can see it breaking up. And can you see a chromosome right there? And can you tell that that's a replicated chromosome? Or is that a non-replicated? It's replicated because it looks like an, it looks like an X right here. You can see the sister chromatids. If it was not replicated, it would just look like a bow tie. All right, so you see the sister chromatids. So this is prophase. This is what characterizes prophase. You see chromosomes. You see condensed chromatin, that's number one. You see the nuclear envelope starting to disappear, and you can actually see those chromosomes inside the cell. And Also, can I, ooh, good thing I didn't kick that. Can't see it on the screen, but I see it up on the board. These things right here and here are centrioles. And centrioles, the job of centrioles are to organize the microtubules and microfilaments inside the cell. And you can see the microtubules also start to migrate to opposite ends of the cell. That's something that happens during prophase. And then you see them over here and over, is that where they are? Yeah, here and here. These are all characteristics of prophase. And then, that very center of these replicated chromosomes, this thing right here, is called the centromere. The centromere attaches to a microfilament, and the job of the microfilament then is to pull and push the chromosomes around inside the cell to start to get them organized. So during prophase, you see the chromosomes start to organize, but they still have just kind of a random pattern inside the cell. That's all prophase. And then here you can see what the sister chromatids, because that's a replicated chromosome. The centrioles with these microtubules moving across the cell, that's what we call the spindle apparatus. The spindle apparatus starts to move the chromosomes. All right, so this is what I can recognize as prophase, which is what the first active phase of mitosis. The next phase. This is the easiest to appreciate. Look at all the chromosomes. How can you describe that arrangement? They just line up right smack on the equator of the cell, right smack in the middle of the cell. And so we call that metaphase, right? And that doesn't last for a very long period of time, maybe just an instant when all the chromosomes are lined up. And then the next phase, what's the next phase called? Yeah, A for anaphase. Anaphase then, okay, the sister chromatids are going to start to separate from each other. And look at that, right there. Do you see the sister chromatids being pulled apart toward opposite ends of the cell where the centrosomes or the centrioles are? So that's anaphase, when the sister chromatids start to pull apart. Somebody have a question up there? You're good? Okay. All right, so metaphase, anaphase, and then what's the last phase called? Telophase. Okay, I'll talk about cytokinesis in just a little bit. That's a process that happens within telophase. Okay, all right, so here you see the sister chromatids now are pulled apart. The nuclear envelope starts to reappear. That happens during telophase. And the cell then begins to pinch into two cells. You see that this little pinching right here and this pinching right here. And there's actually going to be not just a pinch here and here, but there's going to be pinching everywhere along that line between the two cells. There's going to be like a little dimple. That's what we call a cleavage furrow. Think of like somebody plowing a field, right, with a plow or something that puts a little divot right here or a line. And then eventually the cells separate along this cleavage furrow right here. And then that's the end of mitosis, right? So this is telophase. When the cell pinches off by this cleavage furrow and separates organelles into two separate cells, that's what we call cytokinesis. So cytokinesis is the movement of all the cytoplasm into two separate cells by that formation of that cleavage furrow. And when does cytokinesis take place? What phase of mitosis is it? Okay. Okay, is that what your book says?
Yes.
Well, this is what I want you to know. I'm going to simplify it a little bit. Cytokinesis happens during the last phase of mitosis. Okay? Happens during telophase. Now, probably scientists are going to be discussing when cytokinesis really starts and when does it stop, and it might depend on the tissue and the person and everything else for the next 100 years, but for, you know, you want to take that test before 100 years is up. So I'll just tell you that cytokinesis happens during telophase, the last phase, okay?
Okay.
Okay. To make it simple. All right, so that's what you have to know. When do the sister chromatids separate? What phase? Metaphase? Nope. During anaphase. Anaphase. When do the chromosomes line up right in the center of the cell? Metaphase. Yeah, metaphase. When does the nuclear envelope disappear? Prophase. And when does the nuclear envelope reappear? Telophase. And what's the name of that process where the cytoplasm is split into two separate cells? That's called cytokinesis. And what phase of mitosis does cytokinesis take place in? Telophase. That's all you have to know. Okay? I don't think I have this as an exam figure, but it's pretty easy to make a picture in your mind of that if you had to. No? It didn't list it as an exam figure? That's okay. I'm okay with that. All right, so why does mitosis exist? Why does mitosis exist? What are the functions? To grow, to get big, and then to replace old and damaged cells that have a limited lifespan. Right? Some cells you go through a lot faster than others, like skin cells, blood cells. Other cells, you'd hardly lose at all. Those are nerve cells. Those aren't replaced by mitosis. All right. So I think we only have one last thing to talk about in this chapter. Somebody got a question at all on this mitosis thing? Okay. Well, you might be wondering about this zygote right here. All right, that's one kind of cell. And how does it make this person right here? Because all the cells in this person really don't look like this zygote. Because what can you tell me about some cells? Some cells are muscles that contract. Other cells don't move, are skin cells. Other cells make bone. Looks totally different than this thing right here. All right? So there's a process where you have a zygote going to form different kinds of tissues. For instance, like bone tissue or nerve tissue or muscle. Okay? And that's the process that we call differentiation. So this can happen along with mitosis. Differentiation is the process by which cells develop specialized structures and functions. Right? And just remember, if cells develop different structures, that means that those cells will behave differently. They'll have different function because they have different structures. Right? There's always a relationship between structure and function. And that results from the selective activation or inactivations of various genes in the DNA. So a cell that can become any other kind of cell in the body, like a nerve cell or bone, muscle, or blood, that's what we call a stem cell. So a zygote can become any of those cells, right? That's a very powerful kind of stem cell. All right, so that process is what we call differentiation. And I think maybe we looked at this slide at the beginning of the chapter. Here we have, what? A number of different looking kinds of cells. They have different shapes, that means they have different kinds of functions. This is a nice nerve cell because it can carry electrical information very long distances. This might be a meter long. All right. Here are some cells that make up an epithelium, like your skin. And then these actually are muscle cells that are specialized for contraction. So differentiation, right, is a process where a stem cell, right, like this zygote right here, can change, can activate certain kinds of genes, and can produce different kinds of cells, like a white blood cell or a red blood cell, or maybe a gland for secretion. Here's a nerve cell for conducting electricity. Here's a muscle cell for shortening, right, and then here's a bone cell and a skin cell. The other thing about differentiation, all right, if you look at this slide right here, you see an arrow? On that slide? How many directions is that arrow pointing in? One way. That's right. So specialization is an irreversible process. Once a cell becomes a nerve cell, it can't go back to becoming a stem cell. Or a nerve cell can't be converted to a bone cell. Or a skin cell can't be converted into a muscle cell. Right? That's an irreversible process, and you see this on this slide too. So a white blood cell can't be converted into a red blood cell. Differentiation is a one-way process, at least with the level of information or knowledge that we have today. But it wouldn't surprise me at some point, you know, maybe 1,000 years from now, we can figure out ways to convert a muscle cell into a nerve cell, for instance. But today, we have no clue how to do that. And that's kind of a sad thing, because when somebody's nerve cells, especially like spinal cord, when they get damaged, we don't know of any way of regenerating that nerve cell, and they'll be paralyzed for the rest of their life. But it'd be really nice to be able to take maybe a gland cell and trick it into becoming a nerve cell, and then a person could regain that function, right? Their spinal cord could be grown back. So that's just some things for the future to consider. All right, so differentiation is going from, what, a stem cell to a specialized cell, and it's just a one-way process. You can't go back. Can't go back after a cell is differentiated. All right, so I think that's it for this chapter. But we need to answer some questions, right? Okay, let's answer some questions. Let's see if I got the same questions you do. Because this is where that test is coming from. All right, and yeah, that's a study guide right there, as well as the exam figures. So my microphone is on. I'll load this lecture up to the internet so you can listen to it again and check your answers if you need to. All right, so the first question, what is the cell theory? Yeah, that just means that everything that's alive is made out of cells. So the basic building block of life, the basic building block of life is the cell, right? Just like a brick building. What's the basic building block of a brick building? It's bricks, right? The basic building block of life is a cell. It can't be alive if it's not made out of cells. Another corollary to that is that if there's a cell that's alive, where did it come from? It came from another cell, right? And only cells can make new cells. So you might ask, well, where did the first cell come from? That's a good question, but not for this class. Okay. All right, so what's an organelle? This is interesting because think in terms of building blocks again. What's an organelle? What is it a building block of? It's a building block of a cell. If we put a bunch of organelles together, we get a cell. Okay. Now, if we put a bunch of cells together, we get a tissue, right? So make sure that level of organizational diagram that you saw in the first chapter, you have a pretty good feel for that. Okay. And that is, cells are the building block of tissues. Tissues are the building blocks of organs. And organs are the, if you put a bunch of organs together, you get an organ system. So make sure you can go up and down. Yeah. Okay, so organelle is a building block of a cell. The other thing you should know is that organelles give a certain function. They perform a certain function inside the cell. All right, so know their functions. Like mitochondria, what's the function of mitochondria? Make ATP, which is energy. What's the function of rough endoplasmic reticulum? Protein synthesis, because it has ribosomes. All right, so what's the function of a ribosome? A ribosome you could think of as an organelle. Ribosome is for protein synthesis. And rough ER has ribosomes, so that's why rough ER is for protein synthesis. What about smooth endoplasmic reticulum? Doesn't have ribosomes, so it can't be protein synthesis. It is lipid synthesis. What's the job of the nucleus? It protects the DNA. It protects the DNA so that the DNA doesn't get corrupted. Because if the DNA gets corrupted, if the chromosomes break apart or something, what happens to the cell? It dies. Yeah, it dies, right? All right, what are some other organelles? We got ribosomes, rough ER, smooth ER. Oh, the secretory vesicles. Where does a secretory vesicle come from? There's another organelle. It comes from the Golgi body, Golgi apparatus. All right, so the Golgi apparatus is to make vesicles. So sometimes we say that the function of the Golgi body is modifying and packaging. Yeah, packaging. Yeah, packaging stuff into vesicles. maybe for secretion, for instance. Okay. Let's see. Number three, describe the internal structure of the plasma membrane. What's the basic building block, chemical building block of a plasma membrane? Actually, any membrane. The phospholipid. That's right. And phospholipids always form together to make sheets. So a membrane is how many layers? Yeah, it's two layers. So a nice way we can think about the plasma membrane is as a phospholipid bilayer. Phospholipid bilayer. So the building block of a membrane is phospholipid. It's arranged in those two layers. Did I answer that question? Describe the internal structure of the plasma membrane? Yeah, phospholipid bilayer. And what's the basic building block? Is a phospholipid. Yeah. All right, what are the phases of mitosis? I would start with interphase. So you say interphase, prophase, metaphase, anaphase, and telophase. Right? And then you should know a little characteristic of each of those phases. Like, where does cytokinesis take place? In which phase? The last one, telophase. Right. All right, give a distinguishing feature of each phase. What about metaphase? What's special about metaphase? Chromosomes are all lined up.
No.
What about anaphase? What's special about anaphase?
Pull apart.
Yeah, what pulls apart? Maybe you should know that on the tip of your tongue. The sister chromatids pull apart. Okay, anaphase. What's special about telophase? Yeah, what do we call that when those two separate cells are formed? Cytokinesis. Yeah, cytokinesis. The nuclear membrane also forms back around the chromosomes during telophase. What's special about prophase? The chromosomes become visible. Yeah, otherwise they're all very thin filaments. You can't see them, but during prophase you can see the chromosomes. And the nuclear envelope starts to disappear. The centrioles start to move to either end of the cell. The spindle apparatus is built. So maybe any of those things would be good. What is mitosis and what good does it do? Yeah, I'd just say it replaces old and damaged cells. And it's important for growth. It allows for growth. You can't grow without mitosis. Okay, what is cytokinesis? That's when the cytoplasm in a cell that's undergoing mitosis gets split into two separate cells. And when does it take place?
Telophase.
During telophase. Now, here is a good question, number five. I like this one a lot. Okay, define replication. What's replication? That's when another copy of DNA is being made, or another copy of a chromosome is being made. When you're going from a single chromosome to this replicated chromosome right here that you see with sister chromatids. That's replication. So replication has to do with DNA, right? DNA. So probably maybe people should even say DNA replication, but there's only one kind of replication. All right, what about translation and transcription? Translation and transcription are important for the building of what kind of molecule? Would you say DNA? RNA? But translation is also, I want to include that. Transcription and translation, or vice versa, are important for protein synthesis. Say protein synthesis. Yeah, so protein synthesis has two steps to it. What are the two steps? It is transcription and translation, in that order. I don't have it on the sheet in the correct order. It should be transcription first and then translation. All right. So then I have it broken down right here. I have DNA to DNA. What do we call that? When DNA is used to make more DNA. What's that? That's replication. All right, so DNA to DNA is replication. Does that make sense? Yeah. What about DNA to RNA? What's that called? That's transcription. Transcription. DNA to RNA is transcription because remember, what's the building block of DNA? Nucleotide. Nucleotide. What's the building block of RNA? Nucleotide. So it's the same language. So transcription is like making a photocopy. You don't change languages. You don't lose information. So DNA to RNA transcription. Now, what about RNA to protein?
Translation.
And you call that translation because what is the building block of RNA?
Nucleotide.
What's the building block of protein? Amino acid. So the languages are different. One's a nucleotide language. The other is amino acid language. So what do you call that program that goes from one language to another without losing information? That's translation, right? So that's why we call that translation. Okay. Maybe you should know, where does transcription take place? So say what transcription is again. What is transcription? Transcription is DNA to RNA. Where does that take place? In the nucleus. How do you know that? Because that's where the DNA is all the time. It's protected inside the nucleus. All right. Where does translation take place? In the cytoplasm, and in particular, what organelle? A ribosome is necessary for translation. So you find ribosomes in the cytoplasm, right? Okay. All right, number 6. We need to know what diffusion is, osmosis, dialysis. I didn't talk about dialysis. Active transport, passive transport. Okay, let's start with active transport and passive transport. What's active transport? Active transport? You need energy. You need ATP. Something can go from low concentration to high concentration. You can consider that going up a hill. All right, that's active transport requiring energy, just like your car going from low to high requires gasoline. In your cell, molecules going from low to high concentration require ATP. And what about passive transport? Goes downhill, right? Going from high concentration to low doesn't require ATP. Happens automatically. All right, now what about, give me the specific name of a passive transport process, a process that just happens automatically, doesn't require ATP. Diffusion, perfect example, right? So diffusion could be any kind of molecule that's in the air, and it's going to go from high concentration to low, wherever that is in the room. You don't need a fan to blow it around the room. It just automatically moves. Or it could be a solute molecule in solution. If we put a sugar cube in water, the sugar is going to dissolve, and then you'll find a uniform concentration of sugar even without stirring up the bottle. That's diffusion. Okay. I don't know if I wrote this on the board, but what's a solution? Did I write what a solution is? Oh, good. I think I wrote it down then on the board. Okay. A solution is two parts. It's the solvent plus, I got to erase some more of this cell right here, plus solute, so L-U-T-E. All right, so for instance, in a cup of coffee or something, the solvent is water, and the solute are the coffee particles, and maybe you like coffee with sugar in it, it's the sugar particles you put in there. Or maybe cream, because cream has calcium ions and actually little fat droplets and things like that. Those would be solutes. Okay? So why did I mention that? Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay, so things can diffuse. So solute can diffuse from one area of high concentration to low. And even the solvent molecule can diffuse from an area of high concentration to low. What's the solvent molecule for us?
Water.
Yeah, we're dissolved in water. All right. Okay. Now, what about osmosis? What is osmosis? Okay. So there are three things that make something osmosis. Yeah. The first one is it's got to be diffusion. All right, let's talk about diffusion just for real quick. What does diffusion mean? Which way do things move?
High,
Only high to low. And diffusion also means what in terms of energy? No energy required. All right, so that's, so diffusion is kind of a loaded term. It means all those things. All right, so that's number one. Number two, for osmosis, it has to be the solvent molecule that's moving. And what's the solvent molecule in us? It's water. All right, so in particular for us, for osmosis, it has to be water molecule only, not salt or not glucose or any of that other kind of stuff. And then the third criteria is semipermeable membrane. It has to move across a semipermeable membrane. Semipermeable. So there has to be a membrane, but it's got to be a special membrane that allows some things to go across it but not other things. Semipermeable. Semipermeable membrane. All right, and if all these criteria are met, then you could say it is osmosis. Right? As long as it's what? The water molecule right here. And remember, that's how cells crenate or hemolyze or whatever, by the osmosis of water across that membrane, changing the shape of those cells. All right, I didn't talk about dialysis, but it's kind of an easy concept, because what is a solution? A solution is part solvent, part solute. Osmosis deals with the solvent, and guess what dialysis deals with? The solute part. Okay, so dialysis is diffusion. Dialysis is the movement of the solute molecule, not the solvent molecule, but the solute. Like, what's a solute in us? Salt, glucose, even toxic compounds like urea, for instance. Okay, and it also has to go through a semipermeable membrane. That's what dialysis is. So how can dialysis be used to maintain the health of somebody? Don't forget, what's moving for dialysis? It's the solute. And in particular, a harmful solute would be, for instance, like urea. Your body produces urea that's toxic, and your kidneys normally excrete urea for you. But when you don't have kidneys, what kind of machine do you have to be hooked up to? A dialysis machine. And what a dialysis machine does is that it allows urea to diffuse down a concentration gradient through a semipermeable membrane. So urea leaves your body, but what doesn't leave your body? The water doesn't. It maintains your water, but it gets rid of urea for you. That's what dialysis is. So when you think of osmosis and dialysis, think of what the definition of this equation. Now, dialysis is not going to be on your test, but it's kind of interesting to know, because there's thousands of people where that's a real important process that keeps them alive because they don't have kidneys, right? So you should know a little bit about dialysis. Okay. What happens to a red blood cell when placed in a hypotonic solution?
It causes hemolysis.
So even if you can't picture that process in your mind, how do you know that? Because there's O's in there, right? What about an isotonic solution?
Stays the same
shape, doesn't get damaged. What about hypertonic? It changes shape. Yeah, how does it change? It shrinks down. What do we call that? Getting to a spiky, shrinkled, shriveled up kind of cell. That's called crenation, right? So hypertonic causes crenation. All right, know the terms. Hydrophilic. What does hydrophilic mean? It loves water, which means what? That substance can dissolve in water, right? That solute can dissolve in water because it's polar, just like water is. So water is polar. Any kind of polar compound is hydrophilic. It loves water. What about hydrophobic? Hates water. What kind of compound is hydrophobic? Lipid. And what kind of compound is a lipid in terms of polarity? Yeah, fatty acid is a perfect example of a lipid, but tell me in terms of polarity, what is a hydrophobic compound? A hydrophobic compound is either polar or nonpolar. It's nonpolar, right? And since it's nonpolar, it won't dissolve in something that is polar, like water. I thought I had a water on the board. Okay, and... do you have a picture in your mind why water is polar? Because there's two different ends to a water molecule. Here is an oxygen. What's the molecular formula for water?
H2O.
H2O, so here's an H. Here's an H, and remember all of these electrons kind of get moved over to the oxygen right here. So this end of the molecule is positive, and this end of the molecule is negative. Right? So it's a polar molecule. So anything that has polarity will want to associate, because what can you tell me about these electrical charges? If they're the same charge, what's the force between them? They repel each other. They repel. And if they're opposite, they attract, right? Because if you have a positive and a negative, they'll form, they'll counteract each other. They'll form something neutral. Okay. What kind of substances can dissolve in each? Like, for instance, if it's a hydrophilic molecule, or if it's a polar molecule, what can dissolve in a with other polar molecules? Polar will dissolve polar molecules. Nonpolar will dissolve nonpolar molecules. They have to be the same in order to dissolve in each other. That's why lipids don't dissolve in water, because lipid is hydrophobic or nonpolar, and water is polar. They don't mix with each other. And then the last question, didn't I have mitosis here? Oh yeah, phases of mitosis. All right, what about differentiation? What's differentiation? What's happening to that cell? It's going from a stem cell to a specialized cell. A stem cell is not specialized. It doesn't have specialized function. It might not have any particular function at all. But when it gains a specialized function, we call that differentiation. Now, there's something else that's interesting about differentiation, and what is that? Once a cell is differentiated, what happens to it? Can't go back to being a stem cell, right? That's irreversible. Exactly right. Yeah. Oh, you know what I got to do? Sorry, I forgot to do this. Sign-in sheet, especially for disaster drill week. Pass that around really fast. This is the sign-in sheet I'm passing around is the official roster that I got off of WebStar. I got off of WebStar just today. So if your name isn't on there, that's bad, because that means you're not registered for the class. So if you think you're registered and your name's not on there, you could talk to me about it, but who you really need to talk to is administration and records, and then talk to me to make sure that that's the case. So hopefully you'll find your name. I'm sure you will. Yeah, and the figures.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay.
So the test is just the study guides at the end of the chapters, and you probably have the exam figures too, also in the end of your figures, right? So I'm going to photocopy a figure, put it on the test, and then there's going to be a column with terms that you have to match from that column to the figure. And the way to get a really good grade on the test is practice those figures, so you just get 100% on the figures, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you study these questions too, you can do pretty good on that part of the test as well. Okay, we're not going yet. We still got a half hour to class, so we can't bail out just yet. So I tell you what, I have a question here first. Probably. Probably. It will be by chapter mostly. I don't know about the figures, but yeah. Any other questions? But don't forget, you need an 882E or ES. I think E, 882E. Both sides. Oh yeah, let me hold it up.
It's the same one, right?
882. Just what you're using for your quizzes, but it'll have to be blank on both sides. And just like your quizzes, you'll have to tell me if it's A test or B test, so I know how to grade it, or C or whatever it is. And a really good eraser, in case you want to erase something. And a picture ID. Did everybody hear that? Picture ID, that's right. So I'm going to treat you guys just like you're an online class or something. And then I think that would be good. Yes. The percent, I tried to break up the test equally between chapters. So maybe 12 questions from chapter 1, 12 from chapter 2, 12 from chapter 3. So what's that? That's like 40 questions almost, and then some more questions from figures. So maybe not half figures, but maybe close half figures. Okay. So you got to, yeah, you got to know those figures for sure. And all right, there's something else too. Yeah. Yes.
Like
yes.
You don't have to know like the chemical makeup of it, like how many.
No, no, you don't. But you should at least know that proteins are different than sugars, and probably know their building blocks.
So of a lipid, a building block of a lipid, it's two fatty acids and one.
One glycerol, and remember, it forms a triglyceride, which
right.
means
three
fatty acids.
But what's of a lipid?
A lipid could be maybe cholesterol. It could be a triglyceride. What else?
A building block of that.
Phospholipid.
A building block of a lipid is like a you have to know like.
Three fatty acids and a glycerol.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a building block of a triglyceride. Triglyceride's got those 3 points. Yeah. Okay. Shh. Yeah. Okay, rough ER can make protein because it has ribosome. And when you have a free ribosome, it can make a protein because that's its job. When rough ER makes a protein, that protein is inside the rough endoplasmic reticulum and it usually finds its way outside the cell because it ends up inside of a vesicle. If a protein is made by a ribosome that's free inside the cytoplasm, it just stays inside the cytoplasm, doesn't get secreted from the cell. Yeah, so the proteins could be the same, but the fate is different. And I don't think I talked about that much in this class. Protein made by rough ER, or the best way to say this, is that the fate of a protein made by rough ER goes outside the cell. The fate of protein made by ribosome that's just free inside the cytosol stays inside the cell. So it's either inside or outside depending on where it's made. For secretion. Rough ER is part of the secretory pathway. So protein goes from rough ER to Golgi body to secretory vesicle and then outside the cell for rough endoplasmic reticulum. Okay. All right, how's that sign-in sheet going? Is that around anywhere? Oh, that would be a really good figure to put on the test, probably. Mm-hmm. You should know something about the cell, for sure. All right, functions of organelles. All right, so the following information is not on your test, but it will be on the next one. The following information is not on your test because they're going to move to the next chapter, maybe a little bit of it. Let's see how my notes are. Huh? Okay, question. Yeah, exam figures are on the test. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So practice labeling those for sure. All right, so we're going to talk about cellular metabolism. So don't forget, you don't have to know this for the test. Why are you looking at me like that? Like I did something wrong or something. Okay. Well, let's talk about metabolism. I'm not going to talk for too long, just a little bit, just to kind of get you familiar with some of this material. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to stop maybe like in 5 minutes and then I'll pass back your quizzes, your scantrons. But you can't use that for the test because they're used up. But save them and if they're clean on the backside, you can use the backside next time. Okay? All right, but I put your grades online too, so you should be able to see all your quiz grades in Blackboard. Okay. Metabolism. What the heck is metabolism? Kind of a big word. Yeah, your body runs on chemistry. And if we were to add up all the chemistry that's happening in your body at one time, that's what we call metabolism. All the chemical reactions. Muscle contraction is a chemical reaction. Taste is a chemical reaction. Vision is a chemical reaction. Right? The contraction of your heart is a chemical reaction. Even thinking thoughts is a chemical reaction. And that's all happening at the same time, so that's all metabolism. All right, well, metabolism can be broken down into two parts. The first part is what we call anabolism, and that's where you take small molecules and you join them together to form what? A bigger molecule. All right, that's anabolism. But when we take small molecules and bring them together, that requires energy. All right, so like when you build a building, that doesn't happen automatically, that requires energy. So anabolism requires, and as a matter of fact, you can tell me what's the energy molecule that's used? ATP, that's right. ATP is the energy molecule. All right, so if your body can put small molecules together to make a big one, you could go the opposite way, which is catabolism. Catabolism is where a large molecule is broken down into smaller ones. Okay? And when that happens, that doesn't require energy, that releases energy when that happens. So catabolism is energy releasing, anabolism is energy requiring in the form of ATP. Bless you. So, for instance, if your body wants to make an ATP, guess what it does? It breaks down large molecules to get energy to put it in ATP, for instance. So that's how we think about catabolism and anabolism. All right, another way that we talk about anabolism and catabolism is that there's really just a couple reactions that have evolved over the centuries. And once biology has figured out a chemical reaction that works, then you don't have to invent a new way of doing that. All right, so a lot of the chemical reaction for anabolism, which is what? Bringing molecules together, making a big molecule, is what we call, that's a synthesis reaction. We call that dehydration synthesis. So when you dehydrate something, what do? You pour water in or take water out? You take water out. So most anabolic reactions are what we call dehydration synthesis reactions. I'll show you a pretty good example in just a second. Okay. All right. And what's the opposite of anabolism? Catabolism. So if anabolism, you dehydrate something, guess what happens to water for catabolism? You put water back in. Okay. And that's what we call a hydrolysis reaction. Okay. So hydrolysis is putting water back into those two molecules. So they're complementary to each other. They're very complementary in nature. So for instance, if we want to look at the building block right here, I got a couple building blocks. This is a glucose molecule. And here's another separate glucose molecule. Another name for glucose is sugar. And another name for sugar is a saccharide. It all goes by those different names, right? Just like you all have different names. I got different names at different times, right? So this is what we call a monosaccharide. And here's another monosaccharide. So this could be a glucose and a glucose-specific names. And if we want to add these together, join them together, what process would that be called? Anabolism, right? Where we join them together. And what's the name of the reaction that we use to join molecules together? It's called a dehydration synthesis reaction. Well, let's look at the chemical structure. You don't have to memorize the chemical structure, but just get a feel for what's going on. So what's the chemical formula for water? H2O. Well, do you see anything that looks like a lot of OHs and Hs on these molecules? A lot of them. Here is an OH, and then right here there's another H. So if we take this OH and this H, what do we end up with? Yeah, H2O, which is water. And so your body puts these two sugars together. It leaves this oxygen in place and forms a nice covalent bond right here. So you got a glucose covalently bound through this oxygen to another glucose. And what's left over? A water molecule. So that's why we call, when we join these two monosaccharides to make this disaccharide, a dehydration synthesis reaction, because water just pops right out of it. Really easy to do. Okay. So is that called anabolism or catabolism? That's anabolism, right? But the opposite process is possible too. You could go back the other way. We could break this disaccharide down into its building blocks, which are monosaccharides. But in order to do that, what do you need? You need a water molecule, and you need to split that water molecule into an H and an OH, so it can go here and here to form the two monosaccharides. And when you break water apart, that's called hydrolysis. Lysis is when you break something apart. Hydro is water. Hydrolysis is the breaking apart of water that ends up in these two different monosaccharides right here. All right, so when you hydrolyze something, is that an example of anabolism or catabolism? That's catabolism. All right. So the building block, so what's the building block of a disaccharide? It's a monosaccharide. As a matter of fact, you could have a very complex sugar that's made out of thousands of molecules of monosaccharides. In that case, we don't call it a disaccharide, we call it a polysaccharide. So taking a polysaccharide and breaking it down into monosaccharides, that's what we use. What kind of reaction? Hydrolysis reaction. Going from a polysaccharide to monosaccharides is hydrolysis. Yeah. So that's some of the terminology we're going to use in this chapter. Okay. So this is one kind of organic compound. There are other kinds, like lipids. Okay. Here is a glycerol molecule. Here are three fatty acids. And look, we can join a fatty acid to this glycerol by making a water molecule, an H2O. So here's an H2O. What do we call it when we pull an H2O, when we join molecules together? That's called, yeah, it's anabolism, but it's also dehydration synthesis. But it happens three times to make this triglyceride right here. Your body can break this triglyceride down by doing what? Breaking apart that water molecule, putting an OH over here and an H over there. And when you break a water molecule apart, that's called what? Hydrolysis reaction. Okay, so there's some terminology that you have to learn in this chapter. Hydrolysis is what? Anabolism or catabolism? That's catabolism. And dehydration synthesis, dehydration pulling water out, is anabolism. Right, that's anabolism. All right. I think I'm going to stop there and pass back some quizzes. And that is, unless I lied and I don't have them. I got them. All right, sign-in sheet. Who's got the sign-in sheet? Got the sign. So make sure everybody sign the sign-in sheet, please. What about Guillermo? Lucar? This is the third quiz. Kishonia? Mims? Okay, straight back. Sorry, Erica. You're in a very busy seat right there. Joseph Rodriguez. Renisha Buffington. Renisha. David LaForteza. Straight back. Jocelyn Andrade. Over here. Nagata Robertson. Robertson. Wow, all the way in the back. Ronaldo Gomez. Tom Watson. Should I just leave it? You want to walk all the way down? I'll leave it right here. Okay. Ruth. Oh, you know what?